This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey everybody, what's up? Pete Caliendo here, Baseball Outside the Box. How you doing today? October 14th, 2019. And want to ask you, did you watch the Astros-Yankees game last night? What a game. A final home run, I believe, in the 11th. Incredible. But I want to ask you, during the game, how much did you learn? I know I learned a lot. I videotape a lot. Did you see what Alex Cora did, and when Altuve... the ball bounced off of him. Alex continued to finish the play, threw the guy out at home, pretty fast runner. Great play. We talk about that all the time. Always finish the play and be ready for another one. So that's a great example to show your players. Never give up. All right, man, we are here, Baseball Outside the Box, and this is going to be a great show. This is a show that interviews some of baseball's greatest baseball minds and minds in any sport who love to challenge the status quo, and today we will not disappoint you. We're heading across the pond to the Netherlands. You've heard me say many times what a program the Netherlands has, some of the top educational coaching programs in baseball, but other sports also, and we're going to learn from other sports as well. The Netherlands are at the top when it comes to coaches' education, along with the, as I said many times, Canada, Australia, and some other ones, and we learned so much from them. But technically, we're not really going overseas because our guest is here in the U.S., and he is at a conference, one of the greatest conferences with some of the greatest minds, the Florida Baseball Ranch second annual Baseball Skill Summit. It's an incredible summit. In a minute, you're going to hear some of the guests there. I wish I could attend. Currently, I'm involved with my parents right now. A little bit of tough times with your parents, and it happens as you get older. But so I'm making sure things are right at home. But we are excited about the show, so let's get started. Let me tell you about our guest, Bart Hanegraaff, from the Dutch Netherlands, and actually from Eindhoven. And I'm very familiar with Eindhoven, been there before. An awesome place, also an awesome country. Bart has a very unique resume, incredible. Obviously was a player in the Netherlands. He's got a great background when it comes to playing and coaching. We're going to put all that on the show notes, but he is an expert in motor learning and skill acquisition expert. We're going to talk about that. The Kingdom of the Netherlands athletic high performance and hitting coach, consultant for the Pittsburgh Pirates. As Major League Baseball is starting to realize you can learn from anybody in the world, and there's some top experts, and definitely Bart is one of them. And he's also trained under the famous Franz Bosch. All right, so let's do this. Let's welcome. We're going to talk to Bart about hitting and about skill acquisition, motor learning. It's going to be an exciting show. So let's welcome Bart Hanegraaff. Bart, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, listen, I apologize because we talked for about a minute before the show, and I want to make sure. Did I mispronounce your last name?
No, you were pretty spot on. Actually, probably one of the best since I've been here. So, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, because the Dutch name sometimes a little not easy all the time. I can handle the Italian names because I speak Italian, but the Dutch name sometimes can be hard. So I'm proud of myself that I did okay. But listen, thanks for being on the show, and tell us a little bit. Let's start off. I would love for our audience, because I know it's only the second annual, but it's unbelievable. I've been watching it on social media. Tell us about the summit that the Florida Baseball Ranch is hosting there. With I know two of my great friends are there. When it comes to baseball, another Netherlands friend of yours, Martin Niehoff, and also Ron Wolford of the Texas Baseball Ranch. Tell us about the conference.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on the podcast. Thanks for the opportunity to talk a little bit about it. The Florida Baseball Ranch Summit got started last year because we connected with Randy Sullivan a couple of years ago when Martijn Niehoff was doing his presentations at the Texas Baseball Ranch. Also, they had a summit. And from there, it started a friendship, and Randy came to the Netherlands, and he knew that we were doing some different things when we're training athletes. And he said, wouldn't it be cool if we show the baseball world in the United States what the Dutchies are doing? And we just came up with the idea to create a summit and having, you know, Martijn, Paul Venner, Frans over and talk about motor learning and how we apply that to baseball training. So then the idea was born, and we didn't expect it to be so big. We thought maybe 40 people would show up at the ranch, and then before we knew it was over 100 people, and a lot of major league organizations, they signed up, and we were really surprised. Yeah, we did our presentations, and everybody was really, really positive about the outcome. So we decided to do it again.
Yeah, it looks like an awesome summit, and I noticed a lot of major league teams there, which is great.
Yeah, that's right. This year, I think we had about 15 major league representatives. So half of the league had people there. Yeah, listening to what we had to say. So it's pretty amazing for. I mean, for me, if I can speak for myself, to come from the Netherlands and always look, you know, to Major League Baseball and see it on TV, and then all of a sudden you're there presenting for them. So that's an honor, and I'm really humbled to get that opportunity.
Yeah, and baseball is definitely a global sport. It is expanding so much, and there's so much learning to do from other countries. I know I've spent a lot of time in Japan, and I mean, we talk about it all the time. I've got great friends in the Netherlands, always trying to learn something new. And folks, we're going to put all of Bart's information so you can check out his Twitter and his information on his website. Great stuff. You'll see some videos on Twitter, too. I just listened to him talk in a cage outside at the Florida Baseball Ranch to a lot of the coaches. You know, it was a small clip, but I got a pretty good idea of what he was talking about. It was great. Bart, let's do this. Let's get started. Let's because, you know, it's all about education. It's all about helping our coaches, players, and parents in the U.S. and around the world. Let's talk about what you presented there, you know, at the summit, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, that sounds good. So my talk was about the problems of movement analysis and the problem of moving, and how to make a movement analysis based on, it goes a little bit deep into the dynamic systems theory, but how you look at stability in a learner and in his body. And from there on, if you have a movement analysis, how can you apply the drills that you need to, enhance the deficiencies in his swing? Or, you know, if he has flaws or mistakes, how do you get the right drills to get him better? So first of all, I talked about the problem that you have with movement analysis, because hitting a baseball is what we call a open skill. So it's really dependent on the pitch type and the pitch location on how you organize your motor skills. So actually every swing that we take is different. And that makes a good movement analysis really, really difficult to make, because how are you going to differentiate a good swing from a bad swing if the ball is thrown differently all the time? And then from there, I kind of talked about what are some basic principles and absolutes in the swing that need to happen and why they should happen, and then gave the attendees information on some drills and how to train this based on theories for motor learning.
Excellent. And listen, Bart, let me ask you, because, you know, hitting such, you know, it's extremely complicated in some ways, but easy in others. And I love the part about the movement analysis. What give us an idea, what are some of the common flaws when it comes to movement? Does that include like body types also? I mean, you have some, you know, and I'm talking about all ages now, because you have some kids that, you know, are a little heavier than others, and sometimes they can't move in a certain way, or other kids are, you know, leaner or taller. Give us an idea how that works. What are the most, like, the common faults of movement?
Yeah. I think the way we look at a baseball swing is a little bit different, because we try to remove our baseball glasses and really look at it through a lens of just general mm-hmm. movement. And then we look at how is that movement controlled. So I talk a lot about the deceleration of the swing. So the swing is a violent ballistic move. So there's a lot of energy going through the body when you swing, and the body has to decelerate that movement, or dissipate energy away from the body. And one of the rules that we use is if you have a lot of energy that you try to get rid of, you have to use as many joints as possible and as many degrees of freedom as possible to get rid of that energy. Because otherwise you might end up being injured and you don't want that. But also if the body knows, because the body is pretty smart at predicting its future state. So if the body predicts that there's going to be a lot of jerk in the body, so pulling forces, then it's just going to say, hey, I'm not going to swing as hard because I might get injured and I don't want that. So I'm going to protect myself. So understanding a really fluent deceleration in the swing is vital for swinging hard and not get injured. So that was one of the things that I've talked about. And what I mean with using as many joints as possible is you want to rotate fully through after contact. So you'll extend through the ball, you'll roll over, which is really important, and then you use your upper body to decelerate that swing. And that might look a little bit different for everybody because people have different body types. The anatomy is a little bit different. So you have to look at the underlying principles and not at the postures and what do we see from the outside. So I broke that down, and it's a little bit abstract. And to go deep into that might be a little hard, but hopefully I made it clear a little bit like this. So that was one of the main principles that I presented, is that it's really important to decelerate in a safe way.
You know what? Very interesting. I'll tell you why. You know, our folks know that's a podcast, so the visuals aren't there. So sometimes it could be a little harder, but you made it pretty simple there. And I think that's the key, taking some, you know, complex technical words sometimes and trying to make them simple for the average person like myself. I think that's important. I think you did great. You know, what's interesting is when you talk about decelerator, that sounds very, and the brain understanding, you know, the strength of the body and when it can go faster. It sounds like the pitching aspect, that's one I wanted to mention. Two, mm-hmm. You mentioned the rollover. I want you to talk about the rollover because you said it's very important. I think this is a key one. You know, when you said it's important to roll over, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so you roll over. We always talk about extension in the swing. And of mm-hmm. course, you don't want to roll over too early because you're going to end up having ground balls or hooked fly balls that you don't want. But after contact, what we want to do is we want to extend our arms. And the way you hold your bat is if you extend your top arm, then the elbow is going to overextend basically. So that's something that you don't want to, especially not if it's in a really violent movement. So the mm-hmm. elbow wants to protect itself, and then the arm will pronate because that takes the stress away from the elbow. And by extending and pronating, and we see this in pitching as well, after the pitchers release their ball, they will pronate right. their forearm and stay in rotation to make that deceleration really safe. So it's an underlying movement principle that we see in pitching and hitting. And then that rollover will happen right before full extension so that it's safe for that energy to go away from risky spots or risk joints like the elbow.
Mm-hmm. But when you say decelerators, let's talk about that for a second, because you're also going to try to strengthen these decelerators. What are the decelerators when it comes to hitting compared to the pitching aspect?
Yeah, I think it's more the coordination of how you decelerate. So really use your upper body, basically your whole body, to decelerate through the ball. It's not mm-hmm. necessarily that we have certain decelerators. Of course, we have our body and our fascial lines that will stop us eventually. But I think it's mm-hmm. more important to do that in a free way than really pull on some certain muscles or tendons. And I talked about the spine a lot. In your swing, you use your lower legs or your lower body to create energy and shoot it up a kinetic chain. So after contact, you have to stabilize your hips to have good deceleration. And the way your spine is built is that your lumbar spine has 5 vertebrae and your thoracic spine has 12. So there's way more mobility in your upper back than there is in your lower back. And your lower back is more made for stability. Upper back is made for mobility. So when you swing, you want to dissipate all that energy through your thoracic spine where you now can rotate fully through. So using all those degrees of freedom, how we call them, is, I think, way more important than training certain muscles or tendons to finish the swing.
Excellent. And when you talk about the finish, what's the finish look like? Does it depend on the pitch location? Does it depend on body type? What's kind of a finish? What does it look like to with most good hitters?
Yeah, good question. I do think it's depending on pitch type, especially location. Mm-hmm. Let's say if I throw a pitch high in the zone, my shoulders will stay square a little bit more than they will do when the pitch is low in the zone. So if I stay in rotation when the pitch is high in the zone, my finish will probably be a little bit more straight with my shoulders. If I swing at a pitch down mm-hmm. the zone and I decelerate all the way through, my shoulders probably will end up in a diagonal position with the bat finishing higher than on a high pitch. And then I also talked about the dangers of releasing the bat with one arm. I don't think... Yeah, that's also a discussion. Should we finish with two or...
That's a big one, yes.
And why do I talk about it? We see in hitting, we see a lot of injuries happening at the shoulders. Not necessarily maybe big injuries suddenly, but over time... creating a lot of instability in the shoulder because hitters, they release the bat with one hand, but they don't do it at the perfect time. So I don't know if you remember when Miguel Cabrera swung at a pitch, he missed. He didn't rotate his upper body, and then he tore his biceps completely off because there's so many high forces mm-hmm. that go into mm-hmm. the bat. And if you release the bat too early, the pulling forces on your shoulder are really big. So if you don't coordinate your shoulder to be in a safe position, it can end up pretty horrible for the athlete. And we see that over and over, a subluxation of the shoulder, instability of the posterior side of the shoulder by releasing the bat with one hand over and over again. So it's really important that if you want to finish with one hand, that you do that after you decelerate it with your upper body. And I think that is a principle that is not looked at enough.
Excellent. We are getting some phone calls. If we get some questions, we will bring them to you. Also, you know, I want to just for a second, step outside the box, outside the actual topic a little bit, but we'll come right back to it. And I ask this because of real young kids. A lot of times, you know, they throw the bat and coaches will say, you know, well, hang on to the bat, you know, don't throw it. Well, that's not going to work because, you know, the body doesn't understand what to do with the bat. I started looking at some slow motion video and I realized that a lot of major league players, they finish the swing, you know, and like you said, all the way around, and then they kind of recoil back. Does the body recoil back, you know, to not to the original spot, but somewhere in front? Because it seems like that's where they drop the bat down and then go.
Yeah, I think in the deceleration, if there's still some energy somewhere the body wants to do that, it always wants to avoid high jerk. And high pulling forces. So that rotation after contact is also really violent and goes really fast. Trunk rotation is highest before contact and then after contact, because now all of a sudden those forces have to go somewhere. And if you hold on and don't release the muscles or tendons at the right time, then yes, you'll probably recoil a little bit. And as long as your body is in a position to do that and you don't pull on muscles when they are out of a safe position, then that's fine.
Let me ask you, you know, we hear a lot in hitting, and this is a baseball term, obviously, that you hear, you know, but I think it's a general term in a lot of ways, but you hear a lot, you know, balance is extremely important, you know. You watch major league hitters take batting practice. Now, batting practice isn't at, you know, 100 miles an hour, 95 miles an hour pitching, but you hear, you know, balance, balance, balance. You watch major league hitters in BP, they'll hit and, you know, they'll kind of hold it there at the end just to work on their balance. What's your opinion about the balance aspect? The things you work on, is that what creates balance or helps with the balance?
Yeah, I think so. I'm always a little bit careful when I use balance because I think it's open for interpretation. I like to use the term stability, finding stability in the swing. And that can you can apply stability in multiple levels. So I think it is really important for a hitter to find optimal positions in its body. And I'll dive in a little bit deeper. It might be a little bit complex, but muscles, they have certain force length relationships, meaning that at a certain length, they can function at their best. Take one muscle, if the muscle is shortened, it will lose its function, or it will not be able to optimally function. And if it's lengthened too much, it will also lose its function or its performance. So there's always an optimal length somewhere in the muscle. And I think in hitting, it's all about finding those right positions. So in your load, can you get your glutes in the right position for your hips to rotate? In the swing, can you maintain optimum length in your abdominals so that you can elastically recoil? And finding that stability throughout the swing, I think, is the most important part for the hitters to do.
And what's since we're on that, that's great. I love it. We're on that. Let's talk about what are some, and I know visuals can be hard on a podcast, as we mentioned, but what's a couple drills that you utilize to help you do that?
Very, very good. I work together with Paul Venner, who's our strength and conditioning coach for the Dutch Baseball Federation. And he's also a founder of Ultimate Instability. And one of the concepts that and the products that they make is that they use instability to create stability. So he has aqua bags, and those are bags filled with water, and you can use them for training. So when we talk about balance, that balance is being tested when you have an aqua bag on your shoulder, and now all of a sudden you have to find balance or you have to find stability. And those are some really cool training tools that we use in strength and conditioning, but also in sport-specific settings like hitting, you can play around with changing the environment a little bit. So have guys standing on a heightened platform or have them land on a unstable platform. And constantly changing that environment is actually steering the learner or the athlete towards those optimal position. So he's exploring what works for him and what doesn't work. And once they found it, we're going to exploit those positions and challenge him in those optimum lengths. So it's a search. We, as a coach, you can't really see from the outside what positions are best for a person because we can't look inside of the body and we don't know how the learner's anatomy is built. So you have to use differential learning, a variety in training, but you always have to do that in a careful way that you steer the learner in the right direction.
You know, love it, love it, love it. Can't get enough of it. This is great stuff. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, the instability, I remember, going down to Dominican, it looks like they're unstable all the time because they're playing on different, fields and different plane surfaces and different mounds. And I mean, and then all of a sudden, their body has to get stable. Now, we know it's not a cookie cutter program, which is great. And then that's understandable because you're trying to figure out what works for that player. Question about when you're doing these particular drills exercises, Is there a limit? Like, are you doing it for, let's example, like you're hitting off a tee doing one of the exercises. Is there a limit on how many times you're going to do it? Do you change right away to something else? Give us kind of an overlook of that.
A little framework. When we have hitters coming in, the first thing that we do is we make a movement analysis, and we really try to find out where in the swing is he making mistakes or does he have a flaw? So we're really looking for cause and effect. And then we build a training program around that hitter based on those deficiencies. So we really try to attack the problem. And maybe I'll dive into that a little bit later. It's not as easy because you also have to look at what is causing that problem. Is that a technique problem or is it actually one of the underlying principles of motor control? But when we have the hitter and we have drills, depending on age age group, but the age that we work with is the talents 15 to 18 years old. We like to use variety and we like to keep it fresh. So it's not a blocked base where we say, okay, we're going to do 10 minutes of hitting off a tee. We're going to do 10 minutes of hitting front toss, and then we'll do 10 minutes of BP. We like to change it up. So it might even be that in a BP setting, we give him different bats, or we'll give him different tasks every three swings, or it's pretty chaotic. But in that chaos, it's always really important that it's not just random chaos, but it's more controlled chaos where if we work on a loading pattern for the hitter, the chaos is created around that loading pattern and is always working on making that loading pattern better. It's not just about, we'll throw some variety in there and see what happens. One of the frameworks that we use, so it's called the constraint-led approach. And a constraint-led approach, stated simply, is basically saying in movement, you have three elements that influence each other. So you have the task. What do I need to do? That task, you have to perform that task in an environment. And of course, as a learner, you have the organism, and that's the body of the learner. So you have the task, environment, and the body. And you can manipulate those three. So I can, in training, I can manipulate the task by saying, okay, I want you to hit the ball to the opposite field, or right now you're only allowed to hit the ball on the ground or in the air. Or, okay, at this particular swing, I want you to lift your leg high in the air, or you're not allowed to make any counter movement whatsoever. So that's some basic variation that you can put in the task, and you can get creative with it. The environment is, of course, the environment in which you move. So how can we change that? Well, we can throw different pitch types. We can play around with velocity, but we can also manipulate the surface. So standing on the heightened platform, standing on an unstable surface, maybe build a constraint somewhere so he can't move his knee in a certain way. So those are some varieties that you can use based on the environmental constraints. And then you have the organism. They call it organism because it's a little scientific, but the body of the learner. And then you ask yourself, okay, how can we make changes in the body of the learner? And you can do that really easily by implementing fatigue. So one of the things that we did is we looked at, okay, if we partially fatigue parts of the body, so let's say I take the bicep muscle, I'm going to do 10 bicep curls, fatigue out that bicep muscle, and now the body is completely different than it was before that. So 10 bicep curls, take a bat, and then bang, swing, see what happens. And by constantly...
Wow.
It's a little different. but by constantly...
Oh, it's fantastic. Keep going.
Yeah, by constantly changing those elements, those three, movement patterns will emerge, and you can nudge a athlete towards the wanted movement pattern. And it's a really nice framework to use when you prepare your practices.
Absolutely. Bart Hanegraaff, the Kingdom of the Netherlands. He is on a roll. This is awesome. Hey, Bart, when you mentioned these three tasks, and, you know, the task, the environment, the body, now, are we, from all this, are we then identifying the absolute that needs to be worked on?
No. So as I said, it's a little bit more complicating than just looking at the swing. And I'll give an example. Can I swear on this podcast?
Sure. No problem.
No. And during the summit, I stated a quote saying separation is BS. And it's a quote that I use because it's also open for interpretation. And if we look at the swing, of course you see separation happening, but I also see in the baseball field coaches talk about separation. Now, if I talk about separation, we go back to the muscle lengths. If I tell a player to separate more, it might be so that we pull the muscles in our body out of the optimum length. And if they're out of that optimum length, they don't function to their best. So it might even be that we create more problems by creating more separation than we would do if we wouldn't say anything. So you have to be really careful when you use words and when you say separation. Because actually what is happening in the body when we do create separation, it's the muscles contracting together. And the muscles, they have muscle fibers who can contract. And the muscles also have elastic properties. So let's say the tendons that are attached to the muscles. Now, if I say separation, then it might be that those muscle fibers might extend. And that means that the elastic properties of the muscle can't recoil energy. If we do contract those fibers in an isometric way, now all of a sudden those tendons become full of energy and we can recoil that. And that's what you see in the abdominals when the hitter is starting to hit. You see that shoulder to or that hip to shoulder separation is actually the abdominals bracing and the elastic properties of the muscle being stretched and then recoiled. But that's not something that you want to over exaggerate because it can lead to more problems. Now, if you see that, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead. You're good.
Okay. So, you see a hitter who needs a lot of movement and who has a lot of separation and he doesn't create, let's say a ton of exit velocity, then you can say that that person has a lot of muscle slack. Muscle slack, meaning that it takes a long time for him to generate power. Now, that is a underlining principle of motor control, because in hitting, it's really important that you generate a lot of power in a short moment of time, because the pitchers, they throw really hard these days. And if you have any slack in your body or in your swing, you want to get rid of that. But let's say I have a lot of slack and I want to get around that slack as the body. A really easy fix for me is to bar out my arm. Or to over rotate my upper body, because I don't have tension in my body. I have slack somewhere, so I'm trying to create a lot of tension by using big movements. And that might look from the outside posture if that's a technique problem. A lot of hitters and a lot of young hitters, they have their hands really low because they're trying to find tension somewhere that they can't come up with themselves. So if I'm going to try to fix their hand position and keep throwing drills on their hand positioning, it's not going to work, because the underlying principle is that they have to get rid of the slack, and I have to train that. And if I don't train that, it's never going to get better. They will always use that secondary tool of extending their arms or bringing them low to find tension somewhere where you don't want it to be. So it's a little bit complicated, and you have to understand anatomy. You have to understand motor control and how it's coordinated. But when you do a movement analysis, those are really important parts. Is it a technique problem, or is it a problem that lies deeper into the body of the learner?
And the last item you talked about, the hands in the lower position, how would you make that an example? How would you make that adjustment for that particular player?
Yeah, so that muscle slack needs to be gone. So he has to have the right tension in his body, because to really simply explain muscle slack, and it's a little bit more complex, but is if I have a rope attached to a car and I want to pull the car, if the rope is dangling and if it's loose, I first have to align the rope before I can pull the car. And that is the whole principle of slack. Out of your body, your muscles are not always perfectly aligned. So when I start to hit and I still have to align my muscles, that takes time. And that can make a swing pretty long. So I have to get rid of the slack. And you do that by co-contracting muscles. So creating tension in the muscles. And that's a coordination that you have to learn, and you can. And we start doing that in a strength and conditioning setting. So as I talked about, those aqua bags, they create instability and an unexpected impact, and the body doesn't want unexpected impact, so it's going to brace itself. It's going to tense up more. So we use that, and we call those the tensing up, we call them co-contractions. So we use unexpected weights, unexpected impact to create more co-contractions to get rid of the slack. And if you understand that principle, then from there on, probably that's going to clean a lot up for the hitter by holding his hands up, because now he doesn't have to create that tension with his arms anymore. He already created that tension in the right spots of his body, and now he can transfer that energy through, and he doesn't need to use his arms to create any power. The arms are just along for the ride. So
excellent. Love it.
Yeah, and saying this too, and this is something that I think we fight in baseball, is that the strength and conditioning world needs to be implemented in skill acquisition. So it's not just about lifting heavy weights, but it's all about coordination training and how can we train to optimize the swing. And that's why it's really, really, really important for skill coaches, pitching, hitting coaches, to be on the same page with strength and conditioning coaches, and to, you know, to think about how can we pick the right exercises, not only in the weight room, but also in the sport specific setting, to really enhance learning in the athlete that you want to train.
You know, well said. It's not just about the swing, and so that's excellent. So our coaches definitely have to connect with experts in that area, and that's going to help tremendously. You know, you mentioned a couple times earlier on the absolutes of the swing. Can you give us an idea what those are?
Yeah. So for me, again, deceleration, if you do that safe, that's one mm-hmm. absolute for me. Another one is, I talked about those optimum lengths. So to maintain optimum length in the abdominals, so you have to be really, really well coordinated to and be really strong in your abdominals so that you can transfer energy in the most efficient way. And the hard part is, I don't know what the optimum length is for every kid. It's probably different because of the way they are built, but you can give the athlete exercises to find those optimum lengths. But that is really important. And why is that really important? One of the common injuries in baseball hitting is an oblique strain. So for me, that tells me that there's a high forces going through the abdominals and going through the obliques. And that tells me that the body really needs to stabilize that in order to withstand these forces and also to transfer energy. So yeah, for me, an absolute. And again, I understand that maybe for baseball coaches that are not educated in motor learning or at motor control, it's a little bit abstract and it's a little bit hard to grasp. But we talk about optimum length in the abdominals. And basically, you know, that's sorry?
No, go ahead. You're good.
Yeah, so basically, an indicator of that, if you look at a swing, is somebody extending while he's rotating. So you could look at the chest. Is somebody pressing his chest out, or are his shoulders hunched forward? So if I see a guy that is hunched forward in his swing and his shoulders are protracted and his upper body is flexed, that tells me that his abdominals are really passive. So that's the thing that we look at. Or can he, while he swings, extend his chest through rotation? And that tells me that he's creating stretch in those abdominals. So I really look at that. And I think that is the key for, if you want to be a really, really good hitter, you have to be really, really, really elite in how you coordinate your abdominals and how you coordinate that kinetic transfer. So I think in training, that is the most important part to train while you're training a swing.
Fantastic. And then right. Go ahead, keep going. You're on a roll.
The last two that we focus on is the way your pelvis works and your hip joints. So are you stabilizing your pelvis throughout the swing? Because eventually, if you look at it, the move is from the ground up, and the pelvis sets the stage for the abdominal. So let's say if my pelvis dumps forward, it anteriorly tilts, that's creating stretch in my abdominals. And again, it might pull them out of that optimum length. So it's really important to stabilize the pelvis in the right way. And the pelvis can move in three different planes. It can laterally tilt, it can posteriorly and anteriorly tilt, and it can rotate. And in a swing, those three motions, they all work together, but they also limit each other. So if my pelvis turns forward, that limits the amount of rotation that I can have. So it's a 3D plane motion, and we have to train that really, really well to set the stage for what's coming next, and that's the abdominal. So I look at the pelvis, how is that working in the swing, and then looking at the load, how is a player reducing that muscle slack that we just talked about? How is he getting in a loaded position? Is he loading his posterior side of the body? And is he doing that actively? So we look at those, let's say four. There's a couple more, but they might be not as important as those four. We look at those four that in our movement analysis, and we train on those. Really much.
And Bart, in those four, when you identify the weakness, you're now utilizing two aspects. You're going to what? Strengthen that area, and also work it through different drills to let the body understand what, you know, what the right movements are.
Yeah, that's correct. As an example, on the summit, I did a practical, and in the video that I think you saw me do in the cage, as you mentioned earlier, I had a I had a hitter who was cross-legged. So let's say you have a right-handed hitter. His right foot was towards the pitcher and his left foot was towards the catcher. So he was rotated with his hips. Now, I told him whenever I throw the ball, I want you to jump back, land on your right leg, and then swing. So what that does is you're counter-rotating your hips first before you go into a rotation of the swing. And by doing that, you create stretch on the abdominals. And because it's really time pressure, your body is going to tense up and it's going to coordinate those abdominals in the most efficient way that the body knows, because now all of a sudden you have to swing. So you have to have tension in that abdominals. And that is a way that we use, and we call it time pressure during the swing. We use that time pressure to enhance that tension and to get the body to find more optimal positions where it can swing from. And again, I know it's pretty hard, and that's why especially to understand that throughout a podcast. But I think if you go to my Twitter account, you'll see the video and you can see what I mean with the drill.
Absolutely. And that's why I brought it up, because I think, we're going to put all that on the show notes so our guests can go to your Twitter. And the Twitter is basically at Bart Hanegraaff, HanegraaF. But we'll put all that on there along with the website. And I think that'll really clear it all up, because it was awesome for me to see that. And I'm watching it as we're talking now. Now, Bart, you know, the show obviously is only about an hour, and I know you've got a flight to catch soon. And we really appreciate you being on. This has been outstanding. We're not done yet, but we had some questions that came in, quite a few, but we can only, ask one or two, and we're going to kind of put two together here, and it may not correlate with exactly what everything we're talking about, but somebody had talked about a couple questions that come up about vision and about timing. And I guess I can kind of put it in a box here in one question, that when it comes to vision and timing, the things that we're discussing here, do they all work together, or do these things kind of give you those also help you in the vision and the timing? I know that those could be topics just by themselves.
Yeah. I think they go hand in hand, because you try to pick up the ball when you swing, of course, as soon as possible, as soon as it comes out of the hand. And we, during the summit, we had David Mann, a visual expert, doing a fantastic job of explaining where to look. And if you have that information, you can now use it to organize the best movements to swing at the pitch. So I don't think vision and timing are that you can see them as two different things. And also you can't train them in separate, I would say. Of course, sometimes vision training and doing pitch tracking might be beneficial, but we're pretty certain that movements and sensory information, so looking at objects coming at you, you always have to train those together. So picking up information out of the pitcher's hand, looking at what the ball is doing, that is basically telling you how to time it up. And if you don't use that in your training, and this is why we don't hit off a tee anymore, because you completely neglect the timing aspect of the swing and also the vision aspect of the swing. And we always, Rob Gray, who was also a speaker at the Florida Baseball Ranch, he always talked about, keep them coupled, coupling sensory information to motor information. So to movements is really important in training.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up about the T, because I know a lot of people use the T and use it incorrectly. And then now you brought that up, and that's important. I'm glad you mentioned that. Now, question, when it comes to the vision, let's say the vision drills and or the timing drills that you may have or anybody has, can these be done together with the constraint approach, you know, when it comes to being off balance and then also the vision? Or yeah. You think they're done separately? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think you can definitely train them together. But as a coach, you have to use your instincts and your intuition. And it's all about finding the challenge point for that learner. So if it's already a really good athlete and a really good hitter, I think you can challenge them a little bit more. So let's say you throw a constraint in there and you work on his vision by throwing colored balls at him. I think that's perfect, but you have to be really careful that you don't put him in a position where it's just too hard to do and he will fail 9 out of 10 times. Then he's probably not going to be motivated to do it and he's not going to learn anything. So it's all about finding that challenge point. Where is somebody at his learning stage and how can we give him the right amount of challenge for him to be successful, but also fail every now and then, because you need failure to learn. So I do think that you can combine them, and I think you should do that, but be careful of how much variation you use and how much information you give that learner.
Definitely, because it is a mental game, and we don't want to get them down either, when they're doing too much failure. So that, well said, and I love the way you put that approach. Now, you know, taking some of this, you know, and you've identified some of the weaknesses, you're working on them. There's a certain point where now you've got to put them a little bit more into game situation. How does that transfer? Because one of the hardest things to do in hitting or anything, and really in baseball, is, you know, you're working on all this and now your body understands it, your visuals getting it, you know, you're coming together, and now you've got to be able to transfer it onto the field. Just give us an idea of some of the things you guys do to be able to do that.
Yeah, good question. How we do it back in the Netherlands is we have a periodization. In our off season, for us, it's great because we have them full time, our talents. Let's say we start in October. We will have an indoor period until February, because it gets really cold in the Netherlands. So we train indoor for almost 5 months. And in that indoor, it's all about skill acquisition. So we're trying to enhance skill. We're trying to get them better at their movements, try to get them faster and stronger and better athletes. But right before we go outside, so let's say February and March, that's when our preseason starts, and the talents will go to their club teams and start to play exhibition games to get ready for the season. That's where we'll change it up and we'll go a little bit more into the competition phase, getting ready for competition. And we'll back off on skill acquisition a little bit. We will still focus on that as much as we can, because we still have them a lot of times, but we will also make the switch of, okay, now we're going to see live pitching, because the pitchers, they worked all winter and they're getting ready to throw live bullpen. So we'll have our hitters facing our own pitchers. And then we'll try to shift from just skill training more to sport specific and in-game stuff. And then, of course, when they go into competition, they will play games, and we will coordinate our trainings around that competition and see what they need. So more live at bats, not as much focusing on, hey, your swing needs to be this and this and this, but more decision making. Hey, what pitches are you hunting? So it shifts a little bit more. And then after the season, they have a break. And then when we have them back in October, we're going to finish this or continue the cycle again.
And Bart, while you're talking about batting practice, because, you know, I did a whole show on this, and finally people are starting to make some changes, and I know the game is slow, but you guys have really helped with these changes. You know, I'm a huge believer that sooner or later, you know, batting practice has got to be real. It's got to be, you know, I've seen this in Japan a lot. They've been doing it for 100 years. They don't throw 45 miles an hour and just hit, just to hit. And, you know, they actually do some things when it comes to left-handed pitching, right-handed pitching, different pitches, and preparing their athletes for that real competition, understanding that it could be they're going to fail a little bit at the beginning. How important is that? And then, two, when you're taking batting practice, if you're doing it off of live pitching, while they're on deck or prior to that, are they doing some different drills that incorporate, like you mentioned, the different environments?
Yeah, good question. I think the first one about BP, I think what Japan is doing is great. I read a article that also the Blue Jays hired some old professional pitchers to throw live BP before games.
Yes.
I think to prepare for that amount of velocity that you're going to face in the game, the only way to do that is to see velocity and to prime your body to get ready for that. So I think that's a really good move. And it's a little, it's becoming a big debate, like what is better. And I think you have to look at it, in two different ways. If you do BP to get better, or let's say you learn, you have an athlete and you want to learn him the skill, for an athlete to learn, and they found this in modal learning theories, for somebody to learn, they have to have about a 70 to 75% success rate. In baseball specific, you're not going to reach that because then you would be the best hitter alive. In the game, you know, on average, you only have a success rate of 20 to 30%. So being really specific doesn't really lead to success rates. You know, if I'm going to train really specific and see 92 to 95, now I probably won't hit 70% of the balls that I swing at. So in learning, I think that's the challenge point for the coaches, is to find how do you define success. Now success is still defined by batting average, but I think we have to move away from that. And especially in practice, like, how do you define success? If you hit a ball over, let's say, 90 miles an hour exit velocity, that could be success as well. Or if you bring it in the field, that's success as well. So finding that challenge point again, like, are we going to train specific, but that means that we probably won't learn as a lot because our success rate is down? Or are we going to train at really slow velocities, throwing 40 miles an hour where the success rate is really high, but then we don't train specific? So it's always a battleground that you face, and you just have to make smart decisions on what you want to focus on. Then you'll choose, am I going to do BP with professional pitchers throwing at me, or am I going to do it a little slower because I want to, you know, give this guy some time to work on certain movement patterns. So that's my thoughts on BP. And then the second one, do we do any drills on deck? During competition, we don't. We might do a priming drill. So if you're in the hole, again, taking one of these aqua balls and shake them around real quick. So you prime the nervous system to shoot their signals a little bit faster to the muscles, simply say. And then you get on deck and you get your routine going. You zone in, and then you'll swing. So those are some things that we tried out, and some players really like it. So we'll have a pre-primer in the dugout with an aqua bag before you get on deck.
Bart, also, we're getting close to the end here, and I wish we could continue for hours because this is like a 10-hour show. But it's fantastic stuff. On a personal question, just I want to ask you this, and then we're going to close it off soon. On this, you know, when you first start working with a young hitter, I'm just curious about this. You know, a lot of times we work on, you know, throwing the ball, whether it's soft, you know, in front, toss, throwing it straight a little harder, you know, and they seem to be able to time it better. Are we better off working with young players slower first, so they understand the body starts to understand how to time the ball a little bit and then worry about speeding it up?
Yes, I would say so. And again, that comes back to finding that challenge point. Where is somebody in his learning stage? So if you have really young kids, that they have to develop that timing system or that sensory system as well. They have to calculate how far is an object away from me. So I would challenge them with first moving objects. So let's get a kid who never played baseball before. Then I would use the tee, because you have a controlled environment. He can learn the basic patterns of a swing. Once he mastered that, then I would go to moving objects as soon as possible. And if you see that he has difficulties hitting a baseball, you can also throw a bigger ball at him, so a dodgeball. As long as it's moving, so he develops that sensory system and that visual system really well. And then yes, of course, I think start slow and then progressively build up and challenging with more speed and more speed and more speed. But yeah, be careful not to over panic the athlete by just challenging him. And if you see him fail again and again and again, I think it's a good idea to take a step back and yeah.
Yeah, and I love that you said that several times throughout the podcast. You know, these are individuals; they're not robots, so we got to treat them as individuals from a physical, mental standpoint. That's awesome. Last thing when it comes to, because I looked at your Twitter, you know, I tried to do some research. Some of the things you mentioned on Twitter at the show we've covered. Now I know we didn't cover everything, but I want you to tell me either something at the summit that you introduced that was new or that you maybe learned while you were at the summit, just to give our audience a little taste of that.
Good question. What did I learn? I learned that, and I think
I'm something you introduced also.
Yeah. I was in a luxury position that I worked together with Franz Bosch and Martijn Nijhoff and Paul Venner and David Mann. And I think, that's a really, really honored position to be in, because they're, you know, probably one of the brightest minds that I know. And I'm really lucky that I can surround myself with those people. But Rob Gray talking about the research that he's doing now, which is based on the partial fatiguing of the body and how that works. And of course, he's a scientist, so he explains it in a theoretical way. But it's really interesting to see, because we also looked into that a little bit, Paul Venner and I, and we did a little research on that. But now Rob Gray is diving deep into that. So that was something that was really interesting, and I can't wait to see what comes out of that. And then overall, again, the talks that Franz and Paul and I did, again, it just comes down to, you know, playing baseball is all about movements, and the better we can move, the better we can play the game. So it's not just looking at the sport from a baseball lens. Sometimes you have to step away from baseball and then just look at it from a movement standpoint. So looking at different sports, you know, might help you expand your knowledge on how movement patterns emerge. And Franz did an excellent job at showing all the coaches in the room that throwing a baseball is nothing different than kicking a soccer ball, if you look at it from a movement perspective. So that was really interesting. I just keep learning. I mean, every word these guys say is super interesting, super challenging. So I was just lucky to be a part of it all.
And you know, I could imagine being around those guys all the time, man. It's got to be incredible. And lastly, let's finish it off with this one, because during our talk, you know, there's always something that you want to talk about or you wanted to mention that obviously I didn't ask a question about. So for our audience in the U.S. and around the world, anything that you really wanted to just say, but you didn't get a chance to do it, what would that be? Any advice?
That's a good question. I think what I just talked about, I want to challenge the coaches to look at different sports. Look at if you look at your hitters or your pitchers not just look at it from the outside, like what is going on outside, what do you see, but also dive a little bit into, okay, what is actually happening inside of that body. I think for if you really pursue a coaching career, I think it's really important to understand anatomy, that you understand motor control. And I'm saying it's not as a coaching career, but more as a trainer. If you want to work with hitters and pitchers and you want to enhance skill, I think that's really important, not to just look at it from, you know, this is a pitch or this is a swing, but look at it from a movement perspective. What is happening inside that body and how is it controlled? I like to challenge coaches to do that, because I think what I saw on my journey looking at baseball hitters is that if you understand the anatomy, then you can really make sense of why certain things happen in the swing. And then sometimes it might not be a technique problem. So that would be something to, if I can give some advice, you know, dive into anatomy, dive into motor control and see what you can come up with and implement that in your training practices, because we see a lot of good results happening.
Absolutely. You're seeing that more and more. Great advice. You know, when I started in the 70s at Mickey Owen Baseball School, we were all about mechanics. We're all about what our coaches taught us. We taught. Later on, we started realizing that what we were teaching wasn't necessarily always the best way. And boy, I tell you what, if you can learn motor learning and skill acquisition the way these guys do, we will be much better coaches. So hope you're listening to that, because I think that's an area we all need to start learning, getting better at. Bart, can't thank you enough. I know you got a flight to catch. So, you know, we really want to thank you for your time. Give our best to all the guys. I know most of them are heading home. And hope to meet you somewhere, either in the Netherlands or some international competition.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on and for being open about receiving, Dutch guys coming over the pond and spreading information. So, I mean, it's been a blast. Also, I'm thanking Randy Sullivan again for giving us this opportunity to come over here and give our story to what we do back home. So it's been a blast. And thank you again for this opportunity to share my information to baseball coaches out there. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you. Bart Hanegraaff, Kingdom of the Netherlands, athletic performance hitting coach, motor learning skill acquisition expert, trained under Frans Bosch, consultant with the Pirates. I'm not sure. I looked at his picture. He looks fairly young, but he's got unbelievable knowledge. This guy's going to, I mean, I got a feeling he's going to explode in the industry. He already has in a lot of ways, but I think he's going to explode even more. To be around some of those great minds, unbelievable. Don't forget the Florida Baseball Ranch, second annual Baseball Skills Summit. I'm sure they're going to have a third annual. We'll put that on our show notes. We'll try to help and get more people there, because it's a great, great event. Hopefully you will be able to attend. And all our best to the guys there, Randy Sullivan, and obviously Ron Wolfert. And everybody else that, you know, attended the summit, we hope to see you and hope to have some of those guys on the podcast. Also, we're working on that. So thanks to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. Can't thank you enough. Without you, we do not have a show. Keep spreading the great word of Baseball Outside the Box. You know, obviously, there's a lot of great baseball podcasts. I mention them all the time on our show. We're all one big fraternity, and we're just trying to help and get the word out of the new areas of the game that we need to work on, you know, and it's outside of baseball, as you saw on this show. It has to do with motor learning, you know, skill acquisition, vision. I mean, there's so much behind training these young people and making sure that they're the best they can be. And we love to interview some of the, you know, the world's brightest minds in the game. So thank you to everybody. One thing I do want you to know is that we will be emailing some of our guests, and you can email us at petercaliendo@att.net. Again, petercaliendo@att.net. It'll be on the show notes. Send us, what we'll be doing is emailing you, letting you know who our next guest will be. And that way you can email us some questions ahead of time that you'd like to ask our special guest. We've got some great ones coming up. So check out the website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Don't forget our Twitter, Baseball Out. We're on all the social media platforms. Please spread those platforms out. We have always got instructional videos on there. We forward other videos, just like Bart's on the on the on Twitter and Instagram and all the different social media platforms. So, folks, love the show. Keep listening. Glad you joined us. We are thrilled to have you as our listeners and always here to help any way we can. So email me if you have any questions. Again, this is Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, and we will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.